You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. Hi, Peter Werby with you on the Mike Malloy Show. Mike, getting better. I talked to him this morning in Atlanta. I'm broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan. So we are all over the country, all over the planet, right? If you go to Nova Radio, NovaMRadio.com via the internet. So Mike said, I'm coming back Wednesday. I'm going to be here Wednesday because Mike and Kathy and little Molly were supposed to go on vacation next week, and I was going to do Monday through Friday, so we're going to let you know what's going on. We want to get Mike on the air as much as possible. I'm really appreciate all the very, very nice email that you sent me, but we want Mike, right? We like Mike. But he's getting better. He's getting better, but still, his voice was not, as they say, broadcast quality. All right, this is a phone-in talk show, and you can call the Nova M Radio Network at 800-989-1480. And actually, I want to revisit some of the stuff that we talked about last night. Or you could probably do it in sort of reverse order, plus bring in some new things as well. And you are very welcome to, at any time. We're all ADD on this bus, right? So you can bring in anything at any time. No one's even Ian Huff is screening the calls in Phoenix, but he's not saying take this one, then that one. It's just kind of going in order. It's like being lined up for the bus, right? So continuity, who cares, right? Anyway, we started off the show last night with this, and I was a little, I have to admit, I was a little slow on the uptake with all of this. There was an op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday that was entitled, A War We Just Might Win. Remember we were talking about we, who's the we here? Remember that the old Lone Ranger in Toronto, yeah, his faithful Indian Toronto, where that they're surrounded by Indians, and the Lone Ranger says, Tonto, what are we going to do? And Tonto says, what do you mean we, white man? So it's sort of the same thing here. Who are they talking about? But the authors were Michael E. O'Hanlon and Kenneth M. Pollack. It sounded familiar, and I probably dropped the ball in that I didn't do a little more research on who these guys were. A couple of you mentioned who they were and their histories, the fact that they both supported the invasion. But it goes much, much deeper than that. And at 10 o'clock Eastern, that's an hour from now, we're going to be talking, well, let's make that in that hour. We'll be doing it on the half hour in our second hour of the Mike Malloy Show. We're going to be interviewing Robert Perry from consortiumnews.com. If you want to check it out, you can even read the article ahead of time at consortiumnews.com. And he's going to talk about the New York Times, how there is this new pro-war propaganda. Just when it looks like everybody finally understands that there was absolutely no reason other than empire and oil to go into Iraq, just when everyone realized that this is a lost cause that is destroying this country, killing tens of thousands of people at a minimum, including thousands of our own people, suddenly there's these hawks, these imperialists are resurrecting the idea of victory. Now, by the way, I try to use words precisely, as we talked about last week. And when I call somebody an imperialist, you know, it sounds like some commie thing, you imperialist dog and what have you. It's not an epithet. It is someone who desires empire, who wants the nation state, the metropole, our country to have a worldwide empire to expend our fortune and many of our lives on this dream that eventually confounded Rome and the Netherlands and Britain, France and whatever. So that's what we're talking about more than, you know, like an old-fashioned epithet. George Bush's nominee to be the top military advisor, the guy that's going to be the Joint Chief of Staff, Navy Admiral Michael Mullen, said on Tuesday the United States will be in Iraq for, quote, years, not months. And a Pentagon official said the war was costing even more than expected. Well, gee. And as we always say, guess who's footing the bill? All right, so we'll talk with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com at 10:30 Eastern. And you can kind of do the math for the rest of it. I said we were going to talk about Rudy Giuliani's charge that the Democrats favored a nanny government. So I do want to get to that because I hope we have a nanny government. Right. So that's provocative. And back a little more also to the fact that Bush said he's going to sell the Saudis $20 billion of advanced armaments. And that's set off a firestorm as well that it should. Also, the fact that Bush's grandfather, Senator Prescott Bush from Connecticut, was involved in the planning of a fascist coup in 1933 that would have taken over, the Roosevelt government, because he said, this man is bringing in socialism, right? We'll talk a little about that. But I want to talk about energy. And what got me going on this was, Hank the Deuce, as we call him here in Detroit, where I'm broadcasting from, Henry Ford II, used to say, don't explain, don't complain. I mean, he was always getting caught in, with some woman other than his wife and all that. And he would never go on. He would never explain it, and he would never complain about the coverage he was getting. So in a way, I've now twice said that I just didn't think I was totally up to speed. You may remember there was a caller right at the end. In fact, he may have been our last caller. His name was Ryan. Hi, Ryan, if you're still listening. And he called from Montana, and he was very upfront. He said, yes, this is a war for oil, and we need oil. We have to have oil. We have to control oil. So I've spent maybe the last 7 years, as has Mike Malloy, and, of course, Mike and me back in the early 90s during the first Gulf War, that all this was about was oil, an empire based on the necessity to control oil and to have forward military bases in the Middle East that would be a launching ground for attacks on Afghanistan, Russia, China, wherever. And so that hundreds of billions of dollars, and now it's turned out to be trillions of dollars over the years that have been expended of our money, creating enemies and creating a war system that goes under the rubric of military-industrial complex. Now, just like everything else in this society, energy is about blackmail and it's about looting. And stay with me with some of these terms. Now, I had a little power outage at my home here in the Detroit area. We had a transformer box explode about 6 a.m., and it's 91. I know it's nothing to you folks in Phoenix, where what was it, about like 102 or something there today. Baghdad today, I think it was 122. At least it has been that in the last couple of days. But you get an idea of what's going on when you're just deprived of what you expect. You expect to be cool, right? 50, 60, 70 years ago, you were hot. Yeah, you probably didn't even have a fan. That was just it. But now we have a standard, and the standard during the summer, it doesn't matter whether you're in Phoenix, doesn't matter whether you're in Detroit, doesn't matter whether you're in Baghdad, you expect things to be cool. In fact, now in cities in India like Mumbai and others, there is this enormous upsurge in sales of air conditioners because people have them available. What this does to our environment, because they're using old-fashioned technology that's not even approved for use in the United States anymore, is another thing. Well, actually, I should get on at least with part of this, because we're going to go to our break in just a little while. But we're going to be joined by Michelle Boyd. She's a legislative director for the energy program at Public Citizen. That's Ralph Nader's group. I notice they don't even say that anymore. They say it was founded in 71. You know, so many people on the left think, oh, Ralph Nader, he's the guy that gave the election to Bush. No, it was the Supreme Court. Remember, Gore won. But in any event, let's get back to Ryan in the time that we have before our music comes up. So Ryan sort of confoundedly said, yes, this is all about oil, and we have a society that runs on oil. We have to have oil. We can't be at the mercy of other countries. Well, I spoke a little about the price of empire, as I did there, but also there is the cost of oil environmentally, the whole fact that we have to go to war for it, the fact that when you start factoring in all of the cost of the enormous war machine necessary to secure oil like we're facing now, who knows what the price of a gallon of gas is? Could be $15 a gallon. Because all of this money that we hand over to the government that doesn't come back to us in services that we need, doesn't make for financially secure states like Michigan that's in debt right now where I live. That means it's going out the door to war companies. What do they call them? Defense companies. The war industries, that's what they are. All right, talk a little bit more about this when we get back, if you want to call in the meantime. The number here at the Mike Malloy Show is 800-989-1480. It's the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werby. Hang on, and I'll be right back. So pretty, cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city.
a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you, broadcasting from Detroit. Mike out tonight, hopefully back tomorrow. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480, and I was opening up a discussion about energy and oil. A caller, a conservative caller, Ryan from Montana, said, yeah, it's a war for oil. What so what? Well, oil, of course, is poisonous and disastrous at every step of the war. That was sort of a Freudian slip. Every step of the way. Because one of the things that it creates is the necessity for war, and how many wars have been fought for energy, and how many are going to be fought in the future. But also, think about it. At the wellhead, the damage it does to areas, whether it's in the Amazon or whether it's in Iraq or it's here in our country, when it's pumped, when it's shipped, when it's refined, and finally when it's burned. Oil is an unmitigated disaster. And for someone to say, hey, yeah, let's keep going with oil. In fact, if we just practice conservation, we could reduce our oil consumption so incredibly. Bob Dole said, I mean, you got to remember, some of these people are telling the truth. In August 1990, I remember Bob Dole said, this war is about three letters, O-I-L. And they say, hey, Bob, you know, shut up, man. And if you recall well, that the invasion of Iraq was first called Operation Iraqi Liberation, right? O-I-L. Was this just an accident? They went, whoa, I don't think we can have that. And I forgot what they changed it to. What was it? Operation Iraqi Freedom. That was it. But initially it was Operation Iraqi Liberation. But these neocons and who are always conning us, that it could have been their little joke. By the way, a wonderful song by a friend of mine, a singer who's been called the Phil Oakes of this generation, is David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com, and he's got a wonderful song called Operation Iraqi Liberation. I had a number of other things that I wanted to talk about with this, but let's get some of the callers on, because we're going to have a guest, because one thing that's happening is that people say, oh, there's global warming, oh, we got fossil fuels that are a problem, let's go nuke, right? And so these insane people want to put together, what is it, how many more nuclear plants? I've got it here somewhere. I don't know, something like 17 of them. So we're going to talk about that. But let's talk to Chris, who's listening to The Quake in San Francisco. Hey, it's Peter Werby on The Mike Malloy Show. You're on the air with me. Hi.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Hey, I happened to be listening last night, and I wasn't able to call in. But there was something else Ryan said. I heard Ryan's call, and there's something else Ryan said that struck me. And I don't know if you remember it, but Ryan said that this war, this war is great. It's fine because it's an investment. And that's what he said. And then he used our need for oil as the justification or the reason for this investment or the what justifies it. And he said, yes, this is an investment in our future because this country runs on war.
How old?
This country runs on oil.
Yeah, right.
You know, I just would wonder, just think about it. It's actually kind of ironic that you would say, because in my opinion, it's a divestment. Because someday, there's not going to be any more oil, and there's not going to be anybody, no matter who we bomb or who we, you know, demonized for, there's going to be no more oil to go get. So, there's, you know, it's not really an investment in our future. It's an investment in the short-term future.
Well,
but
one of
really
the
overall. And, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, one of the slogans from the Vietnam War was, war is good for business, invest your son. And how old did Ryan sound to you? You know, the other thing that I thought
sounded,
I was reading.
You know what, he sounded just about right for boot camp. That's
yeah.
How he sounded
so
to
how
me.
How come I missed that? That's I went home thinking, how come I didn't say to him, hey, man, get down there.
Yeah, you know, Peter, I was watching the debates when Harry Reid kept the Senate in overnight. They opened,
right, sure.
A couple of weeks ago. Senator Boxer, one of my senators, she got up and she spoke so incredibly. She's such a great speaker. But she said something. She said $250,000 this war. And I thought, oh, man, every day, what? She said a minute.
Wow.
$250,000 a minute. Now, imagine, if you really want to invest in our future, imagine what that, you know, what that money could have done if it were invested in education or in alternative energy sources.
Absolutely. Chris, I got to go. Got my break coming
up.
Thanks for joining us from the Quake on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. All right, hang on. If you're on hold, we're going to get to everybody. Michelle Boyd from Public Citizen is going to talk about rising up from the dead. Nuclear power? That's what they're talking about. Come on back, and we'll talk all about that. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. The Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe broadcasting for Mike tonight. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. You can call in at 800-989-1480. We were talking about energy before the break. And I was saying that some people have been using the problem of global warming and the problems with oil to say, we've got to start re-energizing nuclear power. It's like the night of the living dead. Here, when we thought that no nukes, that everyone agreed with that, there hadn't been any new nuclear plants in years and years and years, and it's back. That's right. Congress, the Senate, has passed an energy bill that would allow the Bush administration to bypass Congress's authorization and could grant guarantees on unlimited numbers of highly risky projects. Now, that's a little technical sounding, so I thought what we would do would bring someone to the microphones here that could help us out with us. So joining us from Washington, D.C. is Michelle Boyd. She's the legislative director of the Energy Program at Public Citizen. That's a national nonprofit public interest group that was founded in 1971 by Ralph Nader. Michelle Boyd, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, tell us in layman terms what this is all about, and is this like a backdoor run, or is it a front door run for reestablishing nuclear power plants?
Well, in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, there were more than $13 billion worth of subsidies and tax breaks that were passed in that bill for encouraging utilities to build new nuclear power plants. One of those subsidies is what's called loan guarantees, and the reason that the industry needs loan guarantees is because the capital cost of building new nuclear power plants is so high that Wall Street doesn't want to loan them any money. And so in order to get money to borrow money at a rate they can afford to actually pay it back, they need U.S. taxpayers to say, we will guarantee that if the utility can't pay the money back, the U.S. taxpayers will.
And does this happen? This has happened frequently, hasn't it, with
No, this is the first time that we're going to be doing loan guarantees for nuclear power plants.
No, I mean that nuclear power plants have had financial difficulties.
Absolutely, which is another reason Wall Street doesn't want to loan them any money.
Yeah, I mean, if they knew that there was money to be made, they'd be right there, right?
Exactly, they'd be all over it. But they are very wary because they look at the history of the 103 nuclear power plants we have in the country and say, you had 200, 300, 400% cost overruns, we're not really excited about giving you any more money.
Now, Michelle Boyd, I'm sorry to make you revisit what I thought we all knew since almost the 1970s, but nuclear power, people will say, well, hey, you know, you're talking about global warming, you're talking about wars for oil, we would just have our own little nuke plants here in the United States. Why not?
Because they're so expensive, and they are, we haven't solved the nuclear waste problem, and they also pose very serious safety and security risks.
Well, I thought they had this, I'm actually being the devil's advocate, which some of my listeners think I am in any event, but I thought they had this repository out in Nevada.
They have, the federal government has proposed a repository out in Nevada called Yucca Mountain, but the Department of Energy has yet to even submit a license application to be able to open that facility. In the meantime, there have been very serious problems found with the site that show that it's not a safe place to put this kind of radioactive waste that has to be stored for a million years.
Yeah.
Well,
now, come on, Michelle. It doesn't all have to be stored for a million years. Some of it only has to be stored for like 250,000 years, right?
Well, basically, because of the decay rate and the fact that some of the long-lived radionuclides turned into even longer-lived radionuclides, you really do have to keep this away from the public for hundreds of thousands of years. And we're talking, you know, once you get up to 250,000, then you have half a million. So basically, they're talking about having to protect the public for a million years.
Now, we talk about human beings, Homo sapiens, our species being on the planet for, I think they've extended it, what now, to 50 or maybe 75,000 years at the most. So this is truly insane. Now, as you know, we have a couple of, I'm broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, and we have a couple of nuclear power plants, Fermi 2, and then, what is it, Bessie or something like that, down in Ohio. And so
Davis
where?
Bessie.
Davis Bessie, that's right. So where is their waste? They're producing every minute we're talking, and if they're online, which there's a lot of times they're not, where's all this spent nuclear fuel going?
All of the spent nuclear fuel in the United States is being stored at the existing reactor sites. And in many cases, it's not being stored very safely. So a lot of the times it's being stored in what are called spent fuel pools. And although the word spent is in that phrase, it's actually highly, highly radioactive and has to be stored in water in order to prevent the radiation from harming workers. So these pools have become very, very full, much fuller than they were designed to be. And so that's where the waste is being stored. Now, if water was lost out of these pools, there would be huge fires and radiation would be released into the air.
Now, I can just hear proponents of nuclear power saying, well, you know, it's been 50, 60 years and it's never happened. Aren't you being kind of a little chicken little about this?
Absolutely not. And we've had accidents like Chernobyl, which was not the spent fuel pool, it was the reactor itself. The problem is we also are facing security concerns that we didn't face when we first started nuclear power. For example, no reactor is protected, and especially no spent fuel pool is protected against air attack. Some spent fuel pools are actually located above the reactor outside the containment dome, so they're actually open from all sides to an air attack.
How many plants is the Bush administration or the industry interested in opening in the United States?
There's talk for 30 new reactors.
Oh, come on. This is insane. These people are mad. As you said, the cost overruns, the dangers, the malfunctions, how much of the time these things are offline. The fact that Wall Street doesn't want, and you know, they're there to make money, and if they think that money can't be made from it, if you don't want nuclear power, and this includes me, and we don't want oil, where does that leave us to fuel our society?
It leaves us with a really great option, which is renewable energies. We have many, many kinds of renewable energy, and also energy efficiency. We could actually obviate the need, get rid of the need completely for new plants if we were to have a truly aggressive efficiency program in this country.
Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't have these huge spotlights lighting up buildings at 4 in the morning. I mean, the amount of energy that's wasted is actually staggering, isn't it?
It is absolutely staggering.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have very inefficient systems. So just by replacing light bulbs with more efficient light bulbs, by requiring appliances to run more efficiently, we could drastically decrease our demand.
Now, this Senate-passed energy bill that you spoke of earlier that would allow the Bush administration to bypass congressional authority, was that passed by this Senate?
Well, the bill that we were talking about earlier is the Energy Policy Act of 2005. So this was in the last Congress. The current energy bill that was passed by the Congress, this present Congress, goes back to those loan guarantees and says, well, actually, not only can you get loan guarantees for these very risky projects, but Congress cannot tell DOE, Department of Energy, how much money they can give away in loan guarantees. So, for example, the nuclear industry is asking for $50 billion in loan guarantees. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, there's a 50% chance that the industry will default.
And there's not the incentive even to make it happen. I mean, if nothing happens to you, if you make a mistake, and that seems to be across the board with the Bush administration, that there's rarely a penalty ever for mistakes at any level.
Well, and certainly with the loan guarantee program, that is true. If there is a default, or even if the Department of Energy were to guess wrong on how much the industry has to pay in a fee, immediately taxpayers would have to pick up the tab.
Yeah, well, and we're not exactly flush, are we? In fact, I forgot, this is a debtor nation. Well, I appreciate so much the work of Public Citizen and have over the years, and I know that you're the legislative director, so you deal directly with Congress. And usually, if I say, well, what should we do, I suspect you're going to say contact your congressperson. But I suspect that also that maybe one person in 1,000 listening is going to do that. Are there ever other avenues? I mean, let's urge people to find out by going to the Public Citizen site. It's just citizen.org, isn't it?
Yes, it's citizen.org.
And you can become informed. Are there other things that an involved citizen can do?
Absolutely. You can contact your utility and tell your utility, we do not want new reactors. You can contact your governor and your representatives at the state level and say, we do not want a new reactor. But I do think that your federally elected officials need to hear from you. People, it's a shame, but there isn't a lot of communication from people to their federally elected officials, and they just don't hear from you enough. So it's really, really important to contact them and say, look, we've tried nuclear power. We've gone down that road. It didn't work.
Well, Michelle Boyd, thanks so much for joining me. You've been very informative, and I hope this closes the door in people's minds to any thought that, hey, maybe it's not such a bad idea, because it's a terrible idea.
Absolutely.
And thank you for Public Citizen. So it's citizen.org. Michelle Boyd, thanks so much for joining me on the Mike Malloy Show.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. You have a good evening. And Michelle, joining us from Washington, D.C. All right. We're back to get your calls after our break. It's 800-989-1480, and we can talk a little more about other disasters, about energy, and how, as I said earlier, it's always about blackmail. Okay, hang out a little, and we'll be right back with more. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. Mike will be back tomorrow. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. And I have forgotten to tell you that you can email me at calltalkyes, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And Tom sent in an email. Again, this is from last night. We were talking about Cindy Sheehan running against Nancy Pelosi. And Tom was all excited. He sent this out to great numbers of people, including me. And he said, if Cindy Sheehan unseats Nancy Pelosi and both Bush and Cheney are impeached, then Cindy becomes president. So I love that. I mean, the very thought of it. I mean, that would actually mean there's some justice in the world, right? But everybody wrote back and said, Tom, come on. You know, Cindy wouldn't immediately get the post. She'd be a freshman congresswoman, and it'd be a while. In any event, he sends along her website, which is sheehanforcongress.us. Also, you can go to my website. It's Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. And a nice photograph of me and Mike. Actually, not entirely the case. Mike is out a little under the weather. When we took that photo in the year 2000, I ought to get some new stuff up there, right? And when we took the photograph at the United Auto Workers International Headquarters in Detroit, and that was the network that Mike and I were working for, he was sick then, so he came. So, I mean, it's a nice enough photo, but I just remember I feel terrible, right? All right, so we're talking about energy. Nukes are terrible. Does anybody want to defend nuclear power and say, oh, it's really safe? And we got some great ways to get rid of this nuclear waste. Don't even reach for the phone if you're going to say, send it into space, all right? Because I think we should send you into space if you think that. Well, remember I was talking about the two aspects of energy, like so many aspects of this political and economic system. It's looting and blackmail. And get this. This was in today's New York Times. Tens of thousands of people have signed petitions protesting a permit granted in Indiana. It was granted that allows the largest oil refinery in the Midwest to discharge more pollutants into Lake Michigan. The petition, which advocates say they expect to deliver next week to Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana, reflects growing concern. They've collected 45,000 signatures. Cameron Davis, president of the Alliance for Great Lakes, says at a time when we've spent billions and billions of dollars investing in the rehabilitation of the Great Lakes, we should not be taking a step backward. And if you haven't ever visited the Great Lakes, I mean, they are phenomenal. They are what they used to be called, the Inland Seas or the Sweet Seas. And the House, the United States House of Representatives, voted 387-26 to approve a resolution urging Indiana to reconsider the permit. Who is it here? Oh, yeah, Rahm Emanuel of Illinois said 15 years ago they might have been able to pull this off, but he says, uh-uh. Well, here's the blackmail, right? Well, regulators in Indiana allowed the refinery in Whiting, Indiana, just across the Illinois state line, to increase the amounts of ammonia and suspended solids that it releases into the lake after the facility undergoes a $3 billion expansion. BP last received a discharge permit for the refinery in 1990. Now, here's the blackmail. Backers of the expansion, including Governor Daniels, said a bigger refinery would mean more jobs for Indiana, an estimated 2,000 contract jobs for expansion, and 80 positions at the refinery. But the blackmail is even more. It's estimated the expanded refinery would produce an additional 620 million gallons of gasoline each year. I mean, it's and if you live in the Midwest, you know that we're paying the highest prices, and they say, I mean, this ain't the case, but their deal is that there's not enough refinery capacity. Well, there isn't. I mean, they've engineered it so there's not enough refinery capacity so they could gouge us. So here is the blackmail. Do you want cheap gas and jobs, or do you want to poison the environment? Oh, you don't want to poison the environment? Sorry, expensive gas, no jobs. Oh, you want jobs and you want cheap gasoline? Okay, then we got to poison the environment. We've got to dump ammonia and solids into Lake Michigan. Wow, we got to get off of oil, don't we? All right, let's go to Ron. Ron's listening on the internet in Pennsylvania. Ron, hi, it's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show.
Good evening, Peter.
Hi.
I went back and listened to Ryan's call. And that was the first thing I wanted to talk about. And it never ceases to astound me how people can sort of take for granted the lives that were lost in these sort of pursuits, you know?
Let me just bring people up on the speed because people are saying, who, Ryan, what's that? Ryan from Montana called in right at the end of the show and said, yes, Iraq was a war for oil, but it's an investment because our country runs on oil and we have to do whatever's necessary to ensure our access to it. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, and that argument justifies that you know, the Lancet Hopkins study that said that 650,000 Iraqis have been killed, and that was like, what, 2 years ago? So it's probably quite a few more people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for us to have, you know, oil to run our cultures, it's okay to go ahead and decimate the populations of other people who have children just like ours, I suppose, aunts and uncles and people like that, right? Yeah, so that kind of sort of argument always astounds me.
Well, it astounds one, too, because you see there's an absolute unwillingness to think, what's the little cliche these days, outside of the box. And like, in other words, we're addicted to oil. What great man said that? Oh, yeah, it was George Bush. He said we're addicted to oil. And
yeah.
It was one of the few things he said when his mouth was open and he wasn't lying. And rather, I mean, what do you do with addicts? What do you do with addicts? You look for ways to get them off the junk, right?
Right. Well, yeah, you have to. They need a program of recovery.
Yeah. And so you've got, you know, somebody that's been doing crack. I mean, here's the deal with nuclear power, as we were just talking about.
I wanted to say something about that.
Okay, do it quickly because we're almost out of
time.
Yeah,
absolutely. The thing that Tom Hartman always says about nuclear power generation is that it takes many years before the plants actually are efficient and are producing electricity on their own, that it takes tons of fossil fuels to get them up, to build them, and to get them working. So, I mean, yeah, it's really a pig in a poke. They don't work that well to begin with.
Yeah, and everything about them necessitates an expansion of the physical plant, which is all sorts of fossil fuels. Hey, thank you for joining us. We got to take our top of the hour break, so it was a pleasure speaking with you. And we're going to be open line for at least a half an hour in our coming hour. Stay tuned for the news. And also, I want to come back. I want to talk about Rudy Giuliani and his saying that the Democrats want a nanny state. And I say, you're darn right. Can I say the other word? I don't know. This is the NoVam Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. During the break, call in 800-989-1480. I'll be right back. Welcome to hour number two of the Mike Malloy Show on the NoVam Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe, broadcasting for Mike. Mike recovering from a bad throat and bad respiration problem, but he's going to be okay and should be back tomorrow. 800-989-1480 gets you on the air on the Mike Malloy Show. And we've been talking, and by the way, this is always open phone, so you can talk about what we're talking about, or if you're as ADD as I am, you can jump in with something else. But we've been talking about this call last night towards the end of the show. In fact, I think it was the last caller, Ryan from Montana, who said, yes, the invasion and occupation about Iraq is about one thing, and it's about oil. We have to control oil. It's an investment. Even though, and he didn't say this, even though it's taken hundreds of thousands of lives, Iraqis and Americans, we need it, can't do anything else. Doesn't show a real breadth of thinking, of innovative thinking, to be sure. Our last caller made that point. Now, let's see, William, listening in Hollywood, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said that caller, meaning Ryan, was insane. He says, I'm beginning to believe more and more most people are insane with their thirst for oil. They sit in cars on freeways for hours, idling, wasting fuel, and screaming about the traffic. They sit in fast food drive-thrus. Everything has been built and based around oil and cars and the wars they bring. We've had oil spills that will never be cleaned up. One would think there would have to come the day long ago, or there would have, when people would have at least questioned this and thought there must be a better way. After all, they had plenty of free time sitting in their cars, breathing bumper-to-bumper exhaust fumes. Perhaps this is the problem. The fumes have wiped out all common sense. Well, this society is run by elites. It's run by the corporations. It's nominally a democracy. But since its origin, a small wealthy elite have controlled most of the big decisions. Once in a while, we the people have gotten out of hand, like when we started the country and, you know, a lot of the big movements that actually brought in some democratization to the country, like, you know, getting rid of slaves, giving women the vote, you know, stuff like that, you know, small stuff. unionization, anti-war stuff, you know, all that. Different liberations, women's liberation and gay liberation. But usually the society is controlled, like most political states are and have been, lock, stock, and barrel by the ruling elite. That's what it's all set up for. It's a racket for the wealthy elite to control things. And, you know, they have different, through the ages, different ways that they justify it. It's, you know, it's ordained by God or the gods or something like that, or, you know, it's enshrined in this or that. But so it's not like we have a choice, William. It's not like, you know, I get caught in traffic jams. I, you know, once in a while, not very frequently, go to fast food drive-in lines. But I've done it in my life. And I've had enjoyable times in cars. I've had some wonderful cars, as, you know, as Americans say, like a Ford convertible, something like that. And yet it's going to be the death of us if we don't alter, the way we live, the footprint we put on the planet. It goes the mantra these days. Well, joining us, and so we can keep talking about energy and, how disastrous oil is and how this is a war for oil. But we're also going to rejoin the conversation about the new pro-war propaganda. Just when we thought we had defeated this again, we thought we had driven the stake through the heart of the cons, right? But they're back, and they had an op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday called A War We Must Win, Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth M. Pollack. And we're going to be talking with Robert Perry, who was a reporter who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 1980s. His website is consortiumnews.com, and what we're going to talk about is on there as well. But let's do this. Let's go back and get some phone calls here. But there was something I thought, I guess that was the piece that I wanted to read. All right. Okay. Well, there's somebody that wants. All right. Let's do that, though. I did say, does anybody want to defend it? Here's James listening on the internet in Camp Meeker, California. James, you're going to defend nuclear power?
Well, yeah, in a sense, I'd defend it. I mean, like, I believe that nuclear power is a great energy. The only problem that I have with it is that we're putting the nuclear power plants on our planet when we got a nuclear power plant based in the middle of our solar system called the sun.
Okay.
We could be harnessing its energy pretty much continuously with really very little cost besides the actual making of the solar panels to collect them.
All right, so you were being facetious. You are not supporting the siting of 30 new nuclear power plants.
No, not really 30 new nuclear power plants, unless, you know, I mean, like Tesla came up with some idea for beaming energy, and if you wanted to throw those nuclear power plants on the moon where we could just dispose of the nuclear waste that's going to be around for, like, what, 50,000 years on a half-life there, that'd be okay with me.
Well, no. So, yeah, I mean, that's what our guest from Public Citizen was talking about. It's all out there, and corporations could make a lot of money selling solar panels, right? But when you're an addict, you're addicted to the stuff you're addicted to, and they're addicted to oil.
Yeah, you know, I mean, also, you know, I mean, like, we're totally bypassing on a lot of wind energy, and also there's ocean energy. We could be harvesting wave energy by placing, I've came up with this kind of an idea, which is putting hydraulic fluids in between plates on our bridges that then pump the hydraulic fluid through generators that then pay for the maintenance of the bridge and a little bit of surplus power for the neighboring areas.
Hey, James, you got to be taking this to the patent office. Don't give it away free. Thanks for
joining
us.
No, I'm giving it away free because it's important to get it out there. I don't have the money to run through the patent searches, but people do, and I don't.
I was only kidding, but thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling 800-989-1480. Let's go to Marilyn in Providence, Rhode Island. She's listening on the Internet as well. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi,
Peter. Hi.
First-time caller.
Welcome.
I usually listen to Mike Malloy, but I do listen to you occasionally. It's just that I can't listen to two shows. It's too much time.
I got you.
About that comment, a war we just might win that you talked about last night. Well, I wanted to call you last night about it. I took this course when I was doing my undergrad. It was a philosophy class called The Art of Western Rhetoric. And you learn all about that kind of language they use, like we, and like, you know, remember he said, Bush, I'm talking about, you are either with us or against us, you know.
Right.
The same thing, okay? Every single word that comes out of their mouth is all rhetoric. It's all distorted language, and it's all got to do with manipulation and lies.
Sure.
And the joke of the matter is that the average person that listens to the news, if they're not educated in the least, of course, or they don't read a book, which many Americans are that way, they're not going to even understand any of this. They're going to totally, you know, listen to it and think it's absolutely the truth, or they wouldn't be saying it on television.
No, I know, and there is something about television. You know, one of my favorite books, and even though I think it could be 25 years old, it still works. I mean, even though we have plasma TVs and 415 channels, and it's a book called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television by Jerry Mander.
Wow.
And it's an amazing book. He talks about the impact of television on everything from the way our minds perceive it to, you know, the social impact. And one of the most important things that it does is that it provides a unitary message so that tens of millions, think of the social consequences of tens of millions of people receiving the same message at the same time.
Yes.
No dictator's ever been able to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And is Jerry Mander was his name?
Jerry Mander, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I'll try to look that up. The other thing I wanted to mention to you was that man from Montana, okay?
Ryan.
Ryan, yeah. Did you hear what he said right before he hung up? He made another comment. He said, well, so what? What if somebody was, we didn't have any food, he said, and somebody in a neighboring country had food? He said, wouldn't it be our right to go over and pillage and grab, well, he didn't use that word, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, to take it.
To grab the food. And I had to laugh. I said, this man, I mean, that last caller that said about how he was insane, he really is insane, and I do believe that most of those right-wing Republicans are insane.
Well, you know, we're going to take a break, and then I'm going to play a song that will be appropriate to what you're just saying. But, you know, I don't know if I got that out, but I was saying, no, wait a minute. According to that logic, then, like, Mexico would be justified in invading
Absolutely.
The U.S. or, at a minimum, sending
Absolutely.
As many of its citizens into our country as they wanted.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right,
thank
Marilyn.
Thank you, Pete.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye now. Thanks for joining us on the Mike Beloy Show. Do we have time for... Do I hear the music coming in the background? Is it beginning to sneak up on us? Yes. Rather than taking another call, we'll get it to sneak up. All right. Well, I'll just take your calls when we come back, because we're going to have Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com when we come back and talk about this new pro-war propaganda. And it's the usual suspects. It's these cons. It's these neocons going to neocon us again. Well, I don't know. What's the phrase that Bush bumbled about, fool me once, shame on me? Now I'm bobbling it. Shame on you. I'm as bad as him. I remember. It's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Yeah, I did a little better than George Bush. Peter Werbe on the Mike Beloy Show. It's the NovaM Radio Network, 800-989-1480. Welcome back to the Mike Beloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. Let me see if I can find the CD jacket from this and figure out what the title of it is. Huh. Can't find it. What do you think the title of this one is? I'll take a look for it and get back to you. This is the NovaM Network, radio network. Peter Werbe here with you. 800-989-1480. In about 15 minutes, Robert Perry talking about the new pro-war propaganda. And I keep saying we're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani and his charge that the Democrats want a controlling nanny government. Barb in Minneapolis writes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter, isn't it kind of ironic that they say we want a nanny state, but they want a daddy state that will protect them from the big bad enemy, also one that wants to know what's going on in their bedrooms and tell them who they can marry? You got to laugh so you don't cry. That's indeed. Okay, let's go back to our phones And here is Jeff listening to The Quake in San Francisco. Hi, Jeff. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Peter. You know, Glauber salts hold 25 times the energy of water, and you can get water to boil in a partial batch at 190 degrees. And I just don't know why we don't have generation of electricity in the desert. I just think there's a lot of things, simple things, pollution-free things that are overlooked. Also, Tesla wanted to use geothermal, and some of these deep mines, I don't know why we can't just go down, whether it's a mile or whatever, and set up a drilling operation to get down into the really hot stuff and generate clean steam electricity. This is what Tesla wanted to do, but people like Tesla made obsolete the business interests of the ruling elite.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, and who was the bad guy back in his time was Thomas Edison. Hey, you know, Jeff, the phone connection just isn't broadcast quality, but I think we got what you have to say. So thank you for joining us. And sometimes when you're on those cells, it just doesn't sound real good. All right, here's Bruce listening to the Internet in California. Bruce, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. So are you. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Peter, yeah.
Listen, the reason I was calling, a couple things regarding your caller of the other night and his support of a war for oil. Of course, I don't support a war for oil. I don't think it's necessary, quite frankly. I mean, the reason I say that is because the oil is available on the world market. We're buying it anyway at the world price.
Yeah.
So what's the deal? What's the deal about controlling?
Well,
it's really controlling for the corporate interests is what
sure.
It is, just like Smedley Butler, where he went to war for the corporations. The previous caller made mention of geothermal energy, and I have just patented a new energy device, which I really not quite free to talk about yet. I wish I could, but I can tell you that I looked up the patents on geothermal, and they are there. The country of Iceland does, because it's sitting on a huge geothermal area, the very very active area, and they generate most of their electricity from it. But the problem is that there just simply isn't enough to go around.
Right.
And if you look around at how many of us are really we want to talk about energy, but how many of us are willing to walk to work? How many of us are willing to sit in the house with one light bulb on or not have on a refrigerator or air conditioners or automatic washing machines?
Well, here's the deal, Bruce. I think, and that was what that email that I read about somebody that said, people are sitting in these traffic jams and what have you. Most of this we've been dealt, and if we had cities that were designed, obviously, around foot traffic and when the weather permitted, bicycle traffic and all that, then we would, of course. I'm one of the few people that's able to. I work here in this complex. I think there's 85 people that work here. There's about four of us that live within 5 minutes. Some people drive as much as an hour. Well, I walk to work sometimes. I've even walked to work in the winter. But most people, because of the housing patterns and switching
right.
jobs,
it's tough. You got to do what you got to do to stay alive.
That's right.
And I fully agree with that. The real problem is that the amount of energy that we consume is just so huge. We consume 25% of the Earth's energy resources with 6% of the population.
We do. All right, got to go because I got our segment at end. Thanks, Bruce, for joining us on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby. Come on back because we're going to have a real interesting segment. Without even realizing the impact of it, the pro-war, pro-victory in Iraq propaganda is running fast and furiously. And we're going to be talking with Robert Perry when we come back from consortiumnews.com. He's got a good fix on it, so I think you're going to be interested in it. If you're on hold, hey, stay there because we're going to get your calls as well. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. If you want to call in the meantime, it's 800-989-1480. We'll be right back.
Mr. Speaker, Speaker, members of Congress, Mom and Dad, last month a girl in Lincoln, Rhode Island sent me a letter. It began, "Dear George W. Bush, if there's anything you know, please send me a letter. P.S. Kiss my ass. Dick is a killer." It began the end of June in the Casablanca. Vice President Cheney, you showed the way. Terrified and innocent, the desire growing stronger, submitting to the whim of one brutal man. I feel free, I feel free, I feel free, I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Last August the 11th, on the deck of a carrier in the Pacific, I gave to you my complete commitment, and it is right. I love you, and I do not want to lose you.
Well, we could go on with that all night. Hey, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. That's Dick is a Killer. It's done by The Party Party. I think you can go to thepartyparty.com for the whole thing. It's got some language in it that isn't appropriate for airplay. And it's on my website. You go to Peter Werby. PeterWerbe.com. And on the left there, I think it says music for peace and social justice or something like that. And you can get the whole tune. Lots of other stuff there as well. All right. Last night we were talking about this op-ed piece in the New York Times, A War We Just Might Win. We talked a lot about who's we in this equation, but more importantly, it was written by Michael E. O'Hanlon and Kenneth M. Pollack, and that kind of went by me. A couple of you clued me to these guys, and I should have known a little better. Someone who is way on top of it and has been so for the longest time is Robert Perry. Robert Perry is the reporter who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 1980s when he worked at the Associated Press and for Newsweek. And since 1995, he's been the editor of the investigative website ConsortiumNews.com. His latest book, which he co-authored with two of his sons, is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Joining me on the Mike Malloy Show is Robert Perry. Hi, Robert. It's Peter Werby.
Hey, Peter. Nice to hear from you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for joining us. You have in ConsortiumNews.com yesterday the New York Times' new pro-war propaganda. Give us some insight into what this is all about and who these two guys are, O'Hanlon and Pollack.
All right. Well, one might think that the New York Times, after what it did in helping to lead the United States into war in Iraq with its very shoddy reporting, might be a little more careful in putting this kind of piece on its op-ed page, at a point when there's now a big debate going on in the country about whether or not the United States should finally end this thing and withdraw, but it did. And what sort of struck me was that the Times did not really identify these two guys very well. It presented them as harsh critics of President Bush's war in Iraq.
They self-identified themselves. It said they were from the Brookings Institute, which is pretty much of a centrist think tank, isn't it?
Correct. It used to be considered a liberal think tank, but it's been quietly shedding that sort of reputation and moving more to the center and even center-right over the years. But it has these two fellows, O'Hanlon and Pollack, as two of its analysts, people that work there. And they went to Iraq, and they came back, and they acted as if they were suddenly amazed at how well things were going. But the way they sort of sold that was to say, well, we are harsh critics of the war, and even we've been won over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really quite true. I mean, what the public wasn't told, either by the Times or by the two authors, was that, for instance, Kenneth Pollack was a major promoter of the war in Iraq. He did a book that came out in September of 2002 making the argument for going to war with Iraq and overthrowing Saddam Hussein. O'Hanlon was not an original real advocate of the war, although he took kind of a middling sort of position. But both he and Pollack have advocated a larger U.S. military occupation of Iraq. They've been sort of critical, but they've been critical that Bush has not sent enough troops to Iraq.
It's sort of, I don't know if you've seen the documentary, No End in Sight, that's just come out. And essentially, that's what's going on in that film. You have, it's sort of a debate within the empire. It's people like Richard Armistead, what's his name? Richard Arma, what's the rest
Armitage?
Of Armitage, right. Richard Armitage being critical of the occupation. So the war itself is never taken up as in any critical sense. It's that once we were there, we did all this stuff wrong, and it sounds like that's what these guys are about too.
Essentially, but they present themselves as harsh critics of the war, and really they were critical from the point of view of the president not sending more troops. So now that he sent more troops, they go there and they're impressed and they're happy. But it's a very misleading article in that sense because they're not being straightforward as to who they are, and neither is the New York Times.
Well, this is sort of a piece of a lot of stuff that we're suddenly beginning to see. And just at a point where we thought there was nobody left that thought this was anything other than a fool's errand, suddenly you're finding these people coming out of the woodwork saying, we can win. We were talking a lot last night on this show who the pronoun represented. Who's the we in this equation?
What they're really talking about is essentially the United States staying indefinitely. So that's really, I'm not sure if that's what they consider winning, is to string this out, to a never ending point in the future. And there are some people who do believe, and this is the original neoconservative vision, that the United States should permanently, base, military forces in Iraq so it can use Iraq as a jumping off point to pressure Iran and to pressure Syria and to pressure Hezbollah and Hamas and other groups that are considered threats to Israel. That was a key point in the view of some of the neocons at the beginning. So if the idea is simply just to stretch it out, this might make a point, but the situation is not really improving. There are ups and downs in this war like there are in any war.
Now they're saying that there's less casualties. There's only 73 Americans killed. That probably means how many hundreds were wounded, and that violence has dropped some. So you see this as just sort of blips up and down, eh?
Well, actually, a piece I'm sort of working on now, which I have some very good sourcing from military and U.S. intelligence sources who have been describing to me that there's been a pulling back of U.S. forces, so they have not been as vulnerable over the last month. Bush and the administration were concerned that the casualties were going up, that was causing them political damage. So they have really sort of pulled back on being aggressive in the past month or so. It's also extremely hot in Iraq at this point, you know, 120, 130 degrees. And so you've had this tendency to have July being a generally quieter month throughout the war. But in this case, there seems to have been an effort to, by the U.S. government to tamp down, the use of American forces in an aggressive way, so to reduce the casualties and thus reduce the political fallout.
Mm-hmm. Robert Perry is my guest here on the Mike Malloy Show. He's the editor of the website consortiumnews.com. I'm Peter Werby. And yesterday we were reading from Yahoo News where, and these figures change, or these years of how long we're going to stay there. And they said at least through April of 2009, which would mean then it would be a Democratic president. And Admiral Michael Mullen, who's been picked as the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he said that the United States will be in Iraq for, quote, years, not months. So they are looking. And then they've got that $500 million embassy, the largest in the world. Doesn't sound like there's plans to get out soon.
Well, very early in the war, I would say maybe it was even 2003, I was at a party with a senator, a U.S. senator was there, and he had just returned from Iraq. And I was talking to him, and I was sort of saying, well, how long do you think we'll be there? And he said 30 years. And I said 3 years. You think we'll be there that long? 3 years? He said no. He said 30 years.
Wow.
He said this will take a generation for us to prevail in Iraq.
Well, but do we have the money? Do we have the troops? Do we have the political will? Doesn't sound like we have any of those.
Well, it's also a question whether the United States should become an imperial power. There's always that issue. And one of the points that we tried to make at ConsortiumNews.com is that. Basically, what we're seeing is a whole change in the way the United States functions both internally and externally, with this idea that the U.S. should be an imperial force that goes around the world, essentially conquering countries. And that does change, that changes the character of a nation, and certainly it has had a very severe effect on the whole constitutional framework domestically, because the in this sort of system, the president asserts essentially plenary or total powers, as Bush has said. So you don't end up having a republic anymore. You end up with something else.
Sure, you wind up with an empire, although I said last night we don't get a Caesar. We go right to Nero and Caligula, unfortunately. And let me pronounce your website the way you do. It's Consortium, which probably makes it a little easier for people to spell when they look for consortiumnews.com. I still have a bet-in with a good friend of mine about an attack on Iran. What do your sources tell you, Robert Perry?
Well, they're actually getting more concerned about that possibility. There was a point earlier in the year when I was getting a lot of alarmed sourcing, both in the U.S. and Israeli intelligence, people saying that was the direction the U.S. government was moving in, possibly with Israel taking the first strike and then the Bush administration coming in behind them. And that seemed to have been tamped down somewhat by the U.S. military and also by some of the folks, some of the intelligence people in Israel who thought it was a bad idea. But it's now been sort of coming back again. And the concern is that in the next month or so, there could be a new crisis. But at this point, I think the jury's out as to whether or not Israel will take that move. And if so, how the United States will react. But it certainly remains a strong, it remains a real possibility, let's put it that way.
Robert Perry, I want to thank you a lot for being on this segment. And I want to just tell people, and I don't want to embarrass you, but the people that waste their time looking at CNN and Fox News and all of that, go to consortiumnews.com. And in the space of the time that you would waste watching CNN, there is so much information there. And also, that Robert Perry has written a book with two of his sons called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. It's available at neckdeepbook.com. Check that out as well. Robert Perry, thanks for joining me on the Mike Malloy Show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, and stay tuned, folks. We'll be back with more. I'm Peter Werby, 800-989-1480. We're open line for the rest of the show. That's another hour and 15 minutes. We'll be right back. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here, broadcasting from Detroit. Mike recovering from a little bit of respiratory stuff. Hopefully, he'll be back tomorrow. Please join us, 800-989-1480. We're open line for the rest of the show. We were just talking with Robert Perry of ConsortiumNews.com. Don't you pronounce that consortium? I don't know. I always thought so. But I guess in order to be able to spell it when you're putting it into your browser. You want to consortiumnews.com. And I'm interested in his book, Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Okay, let me see. All right, we were talking with him about this this New York Times article that was entitled A War We Just Might Win by these two neocons, conning us as usual. And Edie, who's listening in Montgomery, Alabama, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, the article you reference made me think of Queen Victoria and her famous royal we. The Queen of England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, and Empress of India always spoke as if she was the embodiment of all in her empire. At the beginning of the 20th century, quote, the sun never set on the British Empire. Greed, overexpansion, cruelty, and two world wars brought down that empire by mid-century. Once upon a time, Spain grew fat on the gold of the Americas and the slave labor of its people. Rome in her day fell for the same reasons. I wonder who took George's history exams in high school and college. He didn't read it. These bastards never learn, and it's always someone else's children who pay for their mistakes.
I like to tell people when the final history is written on Iraq, it'll look like just a comma, 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 comma.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, George Bush. I mean, how does this guy remain in office? It's just absolutely beyond me. I mean, why? I mean, forget about voting him. I mean, he lost both elections. I mean, both of those elections were stolen from first from Al Gore and then from John Kerry, and yet. It is, and I know sometimes we've had demonstrations with hundreds of thousands, with millions. I've been in them. A lot of you have been in them. But why there is not millions and millions of people? Why there isn't something like the Rose Revolution or the Green Revolution or the Orange Revolution? Just get that man out of there. I mean, how much more damage are we going to allow him to do? All right, let's go to our phone. Here's Kevin listening in Minnesota on the Internet. Hey, Kevin, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Peter. I just wanted to say that answer to all our problems. Hello?
Yeah, hi. What, you know, you were talking.
Yeah, the answer to all our problems is decentralizing energy production.
Absolutely.
Okay. If you gave that access to the regular folks who can't afford to, let's say, buy solar-powered panels,
yeah,
and create financial incentives, you know, that will make an investment. Have, let's say, cities pay us to use power generating from our rooftops, like mm-hmm. they do in Germany.
Well, you know what? I'm actually at the top of the hour, Kevin, going to really talk about the so-called nanny state and why we need the nanny state and why we should have a nanny state. And it's things like this the government should be providing for us. Simple as that.
Yeah. And, you know, this will be a way to cut the hole on the big oil, big nuclear, big coal, big whatever. The only reason why solar power has not taken off in this country is because it's something that really cannot be big. It cannot be owned, you know, unless somebody's going to monopolize solar panel production.
You don't think we're going to go to war for sun power? Maybe with the Venusian space fleet or something like that. But you're right.
Well,
you're absolutely right, Kevin. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Here is Caroline. Caroline's in, you're right in Phoenix listening to KPHX. Welcome. Sorry you didn't get a chance to talk to Robert Perry.
Oh, you must have, that beep must have been my phone, huh?
What?
I thought, oh, you're talking to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I heard a beep, and then you were talking, but I thought it was my battery saying it's low. Yeah, sorry.
Caroline,
yeah,
you got Robert, about 1 minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, Robert Perry is excellent. And after everybody gives, coughs up some money for Nova M Radio, they ought to trot over to Consortium. I pronounce it Consortium 2. News and support that website because he does excellent work and
yeah.
His books are fantastic. I'm waiting. I'll let you know what his new book is like when I get it. It's ordered.
All right. So he says consortium. I say consortium. And what you're kind of splitting the difference there, hey?
Well, maybe that's because I was tongue-tied when I was born. No, consortium is what I thought.
Now, maybe
whatever.
Since it's Robert Perry's website, maybe we ought to settle for that, right? Consortium, fact, yeah, and then that will, and I'm in, oh, here, I actually have it in front of me so I can spell it. It's the only way I can do it. Caroline, thanks for joining us. You're our last caller this hour. We've got another hour, so please join us, but it's CONSORTIUM, consortiumnews.com. Email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Some of you who can pronounce the English language better than me and Caroline. Peter Werby's my name, sitting in for Mike Malloy on the NovaM Radio Network. We're all open line for the last hour, so get on the phone, 800-989-1480. Stay tuned for the news, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby substituting for Mike. One more hour, and we're going to get you on the air, 800-989-1480. You're listening to NovaM Radio Network. Mike recovering's from some respiratory stuff. He says he's going to be back tomorrow, so I'm not even preparing for the show because I think he's going to do that. All right, nanny state, nanny state, nanny state. Make me talk about the nanny state. I've been promising that since the show began yesterday, all right? But got to do a couple things here. Joan wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She said, I just looked up the pronunciation. We talked earlier with Robert Perry, who's the editor of consortiumnews.com or consortiumnews.com, and I was wondering what the pronunciation is. She said she looked it up, and it looks like it's either consortium or consortium. And I think that Robert Perry probably says consortium because it makes the the spelling a little easier. She says, I'm with you. I say consortium. He says, she says, thanks for doing a great job for filling in for Malloy. Well, thank you. And one more thing, and we can talk about this as well. Tom in Kansas City writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I've started my own protest against corporate TV. No cable news channels, no ABC, CBS, or NBC. I'm getting my news from progressive sources online here and abroad. Any chance we can make this national? Anyone who is interested can contact me, and he says I can give his email out, so if you want to get a hold of him, do it. He's okay to give it out on the air. It's, how do you say that? Now, why am I always faced with these words? But, you know, it's like those knives. Ginza, isn't that it? G-I-N-Z-A. Ginza Wasabi. G-I-N-Z-A-W-A-S-A-B-I. GinzaWasabi@yahoo.com. Tom's in Kansas City. Well, I'll tell you, I prepare for this show. I don't have cable in my house. I never, so people are always talking about Fox News. You see what they said on Fox News? No, I never do. Because, it's a waste of time. I'll tell you, it's a waste of time watching CNN. I have. I mean, I've watched Fox and all the rest of them. And the only time I ever look at the national news, like ABC or NBC, I never even see CBS. What is this? What's her name? Katie Couric or something like that? Is I want to see what other people are seeing. And I'm in this business. If I thought those were good sources of news, I would look at them all the time. But they're worthless. They're absolutely worthless other than to see what kind of pap and crap the media is pushing down people's throats to get an idea of why your neighbor comes up with the weirdest ideas. And then, you know, one thing is you watch, like, the television news, and then your neighbor spouts something like they had some well-thought-out concept, right? Okay, so, yeah, I go online a lot, but also remember that old-fashioned thing? It was called reading, right? Books are very interesting. News magazines like The Nation and The Progressive, In These Times, other publications like that. A lot of it, in fact, alternative sources are available on my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. Over on the right, there's a magazine cover. You can click on that, and it'll take you to lots of them. You know, I know a lot of you already do subscribe. All right, nanny state. Really going to talk about that. Rudy Giuliani is so weird, right? I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess I hope he gets the Republican nomination because he ought to be one of the easier ones to knock off. Although, I'll tell you, they have such a pack of I don't know what, that I don't think any of them could win unless Bush engineers another terrorist event, right? So here's the story from a couple of days ago. Republican presidential hopeful, I hope I get to be the president, Rudy Giuliani on Monday, it's not that old, accused Democrats of favoring a controlling nanny government as he continued his bashing of the rival party. Whew, boy, he really knows how to hurt a guy, doesn't he? The former New York mayor opened a two-day campaign trip in the first primary state, also claimed that Democrats would raise taxes between 20% to 30%. He offered no specifics to back up these figures. Well, I hope he does raise taxes, or the Democrat, whoever wins, does win, raise taxes 20% to 30% more, 50%, 80%, 90%. So we finally have confiscatory taxes of concentrated wealth. So we don't have families like the Waltons that are worth more than Bill Gates. There's no way in the world. I mean, these people don't have money. It's wealth, and it's not real. What is it? It's like stuff on a computer. I mean, you and I have essentially liquid assets. Well, I mean, they're not entirely liquid. I mean, we have a house, right? And most of us could sell our house. We could sell our car. We've got money in our pocket and all of that. Savings, the rest of it. But these folks, when you start getting up into the stratosphere, the one half of 1%, the real ruling class, the people that are in the command center of the economy and the political state that supports the corporate economy, they've got so much money that it's not even money. It's not even wealth is just weird. It's just cyber wealth in some extent. So it's actually social wealth, though. I mean, I love to say this because conservatives go, whoa, socialized wealth. That's like communism. Well, let's call it communalism or something like that. But let's even stay with the model of capitalism and the political state, which is not exactly where my political views are at. But yeah, my political views are pretty utopian, so we're not going to even deal with those. So we'll deal with capitalism. We'll deal with the political state and reforming both of them. Well, you cannot have this predatory economy that is defended by this rapacious state, which is involved, and this is what we were talking about last night, about looting the commonwealth for the benefit of a very few. So what it does, it takes our taxes. We work. We produce wealth and value for the people that own wealth. And then they give us, you know, a certain amount back. And we've had to fight generation after generation. Well, we had to fight, not to be slaves. Then we had to fight not to be wage slaves. We had to fight not to have these employers work us 12 and 14 hours a day. We had to fight for safety concerns. We had to fight for time off. We had to fight to keep our kids out of the factories, right? All of that. Because without it, it's the free market. And the free market means our labor is a commodity that's bought and sold. And you don't want we don't want our labor on the free market. We want our labor artificial, the price of our, this, let me start this again. We want the selling price of our labor to be artificially raised. And one of the ways that it's done is by a couple of ways. One is by a federal minimum wage, which should probably in this country be 10 or 12 bucks an hour. I mean, come on, don't we want to be number one? Why are we among the industrialized countries like number 15 or something like that? Why are we number one? Well, I mean, let's beat Germany. Let's make the minimum wage $13 an hour. The other thing is when we combine to drive up the price of our labor so that we're not working at the world market price of labor, which probably is hovering around 85 cents an hour. What we want are living wages in terms of a standard of living that we've come to expect. And, of course, we're on the other side of the class war. I mean, we're getting our butt kicked right now. Because we're headed back to the 19th century. I mean, it'll just be a matter of time before we've got the 9-year-olds at the cotton gins again, unless we fight back. So the rulers have been fighting this class war against us for the last 20 years or so, and we've been doing precious little. Well, last week, Giuliani called the Democrats the party of losers and singled out John Edwards and Democratic Senator Barack Obama for criticism on economics and foreign policy. And this is interesting, this losers thing. This was this is the way that dreadful person, I don't want to even say her name. She's got, she's thin, she's got blonde hair, she's always showing a lot of skin. If you know who I'm talking about, fine. If you don't, that's even better. But I don't want to give her any more publicity because she's famous for being famous, essentially. So I call her TDP, that dreadful person. And also, I can't even think of his first name. Michael Weiner. You may know him by his stage name. If you don't, good. We'll just call him Michael Weiner. So, the nanny state. I never even got into that. The nanny state means that when this society in this world, which is capable of producing enormous wealth, and instead of using it in a manner that benefits the world's population, or in the case of the United States, just us, it is concentrated, hogged by this small elite at the top of society to the detriment of the vast amount of people, certainly in the world, and to large number, tens of millions of people in this country. So what we need, if we're going to have a capitalist state with a political state at the top, it should be the apparatus which guarantees fairness, which takes the money that is way beyond consumption level of the people at the top and begins to use it for what we need. health, education, transportation, and they're saying, yeah, how about solar panels? How about the government paying for social panels for all of us? And not with our money, but for the from the billionaires. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show, Nova M Radio Network, 800-989-1480. You tell me what you think, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. Taking your calls at 800-989-1480. Talking heads, Ian? Sounds great. We're talking about Rudy Giuliani's charge, that wingnut, that the Democrats favor a controlling nanny government. Well, we don't favor a controlling nanny government. But if you got, so it's you're being taken care of. I mean, gee. Isn't that nice? As opposed to what? Somebody made the point earlier in an email that the conservatives want a daddy state. And what's daddy? A daddy state? I mean, that's, you know, where that's coming from. Punitive, aggressive, defensive, rigid, right? I mean, not all dads are like that. But in terms, when you start talking about political entities or political states that have the characteristics of humans, how about a mother state as opposed to a father state, the fatherland, right? Michael writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, we need the nanny state for one hugely popular activity. The religious nuts need it. Small government proponents can't get enough of it. Fiscal conservatives can't spend enough of it. What is it? War. Well, the nanny state, Michael, isn't going to carry out war. That's something that the daddy state does, right? All right. Oh, here. This is cute. I like this, too. This is from Jeff. He writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Please be specific. Your web page does not state what you wish to change, nor how you intend to do it. That's Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. He says, I would really love to know. You remind me of the communist in the James Cagney movie, 1-2-3, who ends up running the Coca-Cola plant and being well paid, too. That's weird. But I thought I was suggesting a few reforms. But Jeff wants to know, how do you wish to change things, and how do you intend to do it? It's a decent question. We'll address that as we go along. All right, here is David is in Blaine, Washington on the Internet. David, it's the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. Hi. David, did I do that right? Maybe I didn't do it. Let me press it again here. David, are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, great. I just wanted to – maybe you and Mike and everybody and Randy can run with this, but, you know, the Department of Defense officials and Pentagon officials, and especially the Joint Chiefs of Staff, windbags, have been hiding for 6 years, or for the good part of since we've invaded Iraq, hiding behind their deceptive use of the word war.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
What do you mean? No, I don't know.
And every time – because right now I'm watching C-SPAN 2, and they're grilling all the various deputy defense secretaries and joint chiefs of staff officials, and how they're framing this whole thing in Iraq,
okay.
And calling it a war. We know that it's not a war. We know that we're occupying Iraq.
It's an occupation, not a war, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, but yet they're able to hide under the chaos between the sectarian violence between the tribes there. You know, so they can get sort of hiding behind the smoke that's and the chaos and the violence and destruction there in their begging for more money, especially for the surge. The money that was appropriated for the surge is going to run out in October, and they're mincing all these words, and they've enjoyed having this phony Republican majority chairing all the committees, not asking all the questions.
Wait. Democrats are you mean?
No. The Republicans have been chairing all the committees up until the until 2006.
Right.
So when you look at these Pentagon Department of Defense officials having to answer the questioning from not just from the Democrats, but other lines of questioning that really put the spotlight on the way that they've been framing this whole thing from the get-go.
Well, they like, war means that civil liberties can be abridged. We can, funnel more and more money to the war industries, on and on with that. But remember, the war on poverty, the war on drugs. War on drugs, I can't even drive on drugs.
But the way that they've been packaging it and selling it to the warmongering aspects of our population in America, and just playing everybody like a fiddle and touching on that warmongering sort of nerve that everybody has, that we're all trying to keep a lid on.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Do we all have it? I don't have it. Do you have it?
I guess maybe not a warmongering nerve ending, the use of fear and the deceptive use of it to just whip everybody up, and to the point where, I'll give up some of my liberties in order to feel safe. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's the card that government always plays.
So the talk show hosts have to take the gloves off right now in conjunction, in concert with our representatives.
Mike Malloy's show. Peter Werbe here with you, broadcasting for Mike. Mike's out recovering from some respiratory stuff. Hopefully he will be back tomorrow. Now, I've got such a mess on my console here, I can't even find the original email. But I remember the guy at the top of the hour that I read this email from him that he sent into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, that he said that he was just wasn't going to watch television essentially anymore. And got quite a bit of response here. Let's see. John wrote in, I agree with you about cable news, etc. I stopped getting certain cable news feeds just to stop watching CNN. It's more disgusting than Fox now, quite often. Alan Rochester writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. When I mentioned that all you get is pap and crap. I don't know. Sometimes these things come out. He liked it. Perfect, catchy, succinct description of what comes out of CNN and Fox News. I can't stop laughing. That's good, too. We used to call it during the Iraq, when they were leading up to the war on the old IE America radio network where I broadcast with Mike, we called it the foxhole news. Right? Can't stop laughing. Got to use that one often. It's a keeper. Okay. Let's go back to our phones, which are 800-989-1480. Hey, if you were getting a little breakup in the signal, I don't know, is there something going on? No, it's not a full moon anymore. But apologies for any disturbance in our usually perfect signal here at Nova M Radio. Here's Sean in St. Joseph, Michigan. Sean, hi, it's Peter Werbe over on the other side of the state in Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Peter. I just wanted to comment about the nuclear power.
Sure.
I live about 3 miles away from where the last one built, the Donald C. Cook nuclear power plant.
That's right.
And I am pretty neutral as to power, nuclear power versus coal power versus natural gas. I happened to watch a little documentary about Chernobyl. It was like a combination of stupid action and bad sensors. And I just am not that concerned of a nuclear meltdown in this country. But I also wanted to comment. I also...
Here's the problem with nuclear power.
You can't have, it's got to be error-free. You can't make any mistakes of any magnitude. Where with almost anything else, I mean, it's true with operating a lot of machinery, but something that that has the capacity that those nuclear plants have, and what are you going to do with all the waste? That's what we were talking about.
Well,
I mean, we don't need them. We don't need them at all. Then they're too expensive. They drive our rates up here in Michigan.
Well, France, for instance, they recycle their nuclear, their spent nuclear fuel. It's like nuclear fuel is like when you take a breath of air. You only use like 5 or 10% of the air, you know, and they like melt it down with the acid and reformulate it or something. But we don't have an infrastructure in place to take care of it. All that nuclear fuel, that spent fuel that's in Yucca Mountain, it's still 85% of it is still, you know, a viable fuel. It's just we don't have a way to reformulate it. So, I mean, that would be part of the that take care of one of your concerns.
Well,
we
don't need it. Everything that nuclear power could supply in terms of energy needs, and first off, like somebody said earlier, there is so much attendant energy usage in order to get that online to provide energy from it, that it almost turns out to be a zero sum when we could almost meet all of our needs as currently as they're, with what we have currently, simply by conservation, let alone getting rid of all this poisonous stuff that makes us go to war and getting on to the fuels that are there that are reproducible and aren't going to kill us.
Well, I mean, you got to look at it from a few different angles. If it's not green energy, solar, wind, I prefer nuclear over building more coal power plants. That's my opinion.
Coal.
But
wow.
I mean,
you want everything that's poisoning us, Sean?
You know, there's a coal power plant about 20 miles from my house, and I happened to be driving by it 2 days ago, and there was hundreds upon hundreds of overflowing coal train cars to feed that thing outside of the place. I mean, if it's not one bad thing, it's another. I mean, there's bad and good and bad with everything.
Well,
but if it's not green energy, it's bad, period.
You got it. Thank you, sir. Thank you, for joining us. I appreciate it. Let's go down to Miami where they could do solar power big time. Here's Joe. Joe, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah. Peter?
Hi. You're on the air. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say Yucca Mountain is what it's really good for is drum circles you can have up there.
Well, you know, I know.
Real live drum circles, huh?
Yeah, I've known people that have gone out there. Who's
that? Absolutely, you're talking to. Pardon?
Is that the Shawnee out there? Is that where?
Swedes were from all over. I think it was the Great Peace March for Nuclear Disarmament in 1986. It was coming back across from Los Angeles on its way to Washington, D.C., and we stopped off to protest.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, and I don't mean to, probably this occurred to you, but I don't want to go within 500 miles of those areas where they have all that place. But good health to you, sir.
But what I really called for, huh?
I said good health to you.
Thanks. What I really called for?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you heard much about this meeting planned for August 20th
in Montreal?
Montreal, Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
The SPP, the security, better put a quote first, quote, security and prosperity partnership, end quote.
This is where Bush and Harper and Calderon are going to meet and allegedly set up some sort of united North America, right?
Yeah, North American Union, also known, quote, also known as, quote, deep integration, end quote. I'd just like to recommend to the listeners, to my fellow Americans, the website globalresearch.ca. For some good updates on that, it looks like it's just what they call, now this is kind of like be like a cliche, NAFTA on steroids, but it's much worse than that, is what they're saying.
Well,
you know, it's like trying to combine into one country and really exploit, really knock down, knock off, change all the regulations with corporations being the ones doing it. There's no democratic input, same as all the other previous globalization catastrophe.
Well, sure. But the idea that, that we're going to be melded into one country, I hate to say it, but I think it's just sort of paranoia. None of the countries would go for it, and it ain't going to go over here, that's
not
for sure.
Paranoid that they think, you don't think that they will try it if we have another terrorist flag attack or something like that.
Who knows what they'll do?
Well, we need security. We need security, and this is what we have to do for you folks. We're going to do it, whether you like it or not. We're going to shove it down your throat.
Even the most insane neocons do not want to integrate Mexico into the United States.
Yeah, corporations want to do it because they want to exploit the masses. They just assume, as far as I'm concerned, that's what they want to do, is exploit the masses, and this is the best way to do it.
Well, they certainly want to do that. Yeah, that's all on the agenda. That's right. That's what I said earlier. There's class war going on big time, and it ain't coming from our side. It's coming from
the
top.
Peter.
All right, Joe, thank you. Thanks for joining us at 800-989-1480. And we've got a few technical problems, so I don't know who's coming up next, but if they're Tom from Burlington, you're on the air. Go ahead. Tom, are you with me?
Hello. Is it? Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Good.
Go ahead.
Great. Hey, every time I hear this comment about the French have nuclear power, or they've gained a lot of their electricity from nuclear power.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, there was a big, it probably wasn't in the news that much, but they were dumping their nuclear waste in West Africa.
Oh,
and,
no.
Whenever you hear this thing that the French are doing well with it, the country's Benin. I know it's a little country in West Africa next to Nigeria.
Right.
I just know there was a guy from New York that, you know, they wanted his head because he contracted with France to get rid of nuclear stuff, and he just took it and dumped it in a West African country where the chief or the king of the country or the prime minister would, he paid him off to dump the waste there.
Now, where else is that occurring? A little closer to home. It's happening in the Southwest as well, where low-level medical nuclear waste, and even some of these Indian tribes that are so poor are willing to allow their native land to be used to dump this kind of stuff that they didn't benefit from in the slightest, but they're so impoverished. And that, again, has to do with the world order, not the new world order, but the current world order of wealth and with extreme wealth and extreme poverty, extreme concentration of wealth, and people that are, like in Mexico, 50% of people in Mexico live on $5 a day.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, I just know that they take advantage. They always bring that up, that France does well with nuclear power, but they haven't really solved those.
Well, I can't thank you enough, because one thing I cannot do is have the answer for everything, and that's what's nice about a progressive audience, because between us all, we have the answers. In fact, I started to talk about this, I think, yesterday, where conservative listeners listen. I mean, I can only do it for about 3 minutes at a time. You listen to these righty shows, and all the these right-wing callers, they don't bring a bit of information to the program at all. All they want to say, what do you think about this, Rush? And then, let him go off. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us. All right, and we'll be back with one more segment, so stay with us. I can't tell. I don't have a screen board up here, so I can't tell whether we got open lines or not. Try it. Give us a call, 800-989-1480. It's the Nova M Radio Network, the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby, and I'll be right back. Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, and this is our last segment. And normally I would say I would hope I'll be back tomorrow, but I hope Mike Malloy will be back tomorrow. I was just looking through this mess on my console of all the articles we've been talking about, And the one about the nomination of Navy Admiral Michael Mullen to be the Joint Chief of Staff, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I just found this little thing in the back. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office provided an analysis for long-term war costs. It estimated that if troops in Iraq and Afghanistan were reduced to 75,000 over the next 5 years and stayed at that level through 2017, it will cost the U.S. Treasury $845 billion over a 10-year period. Now, does anybody want to bet that the cost would go up? So if it only goes up $155 billion only, what is that called? That's called a trillion. As it is, even with the idea that this is all going to end in a year or so, they're talking about, when you factor in all the costs, $2.1 trillion. This is what will come out of our pocketbooks and go into the pocketbooks of what makes the military-industrial complex the leading institution in this warfare state. So, we're being fleeced. We're being looted. All right, let's go back to our phones. Here's Brad in Corvallis, Oregon. Brad, hi, it's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, Brad, you with me? Brad. Brad, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, go ahead, man. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, so I just heard you talking about nuclear energy
uh-huh.
and some of the problems with it. So I read in the Oregonian that today, I'm pretty sure it's today's paper, that there was a leak at Hanover, which is in South Central Washington.
Right. Wow, great.
So if you want to look it up.
Yeah, they've always got some problem or other. Here in Michigan, they have Fermi, what is it? Fermi 2, because Fermi 1 has this permanent cement cap on it, because there's a famous book from the, I think, the 60s called We Almost Lost Detroit. There was a fear that it was going to melt down. Yeah.
Well, so, Hanover is really close to the Columbia River, right?
Oh, I know.
So beyond all the other problems, I mean, they can't even contain
That's what I mean. The risk so far outweighs everything about it. The safety risk, the cost, the long-term storage, everything under the sun. I don't know if you heard our guest in the first hour, but she was saying that the only way that they can, in fact, the only way that nuclear power ever got going in this country was through massive corporate welfare. Is that you and I and our parents before us paid to subsidize these huge industries that have never paid off, to the point where Wall Street won't finance their construction costs because they're fearful that they're not going to get a return on their investment. So why in the hell would we be even considering this? I mean, these people are quite mad indeed. All right, sir, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Let's go to Henry. Henry's in Sacramento. Henry, hi. It's Peter Werbe. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Henry, and you know, I just wanted to bring up, you know, this our policy in Iraq is it sounds like a repeat of what we have done to a lot of these third world countries, especially during the 80s. What we do is we saddle them with debt, and then and we extract their resources.
Sure.
Sound like a familiar program?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, under Saddam Hussein, there was a national law, a federal law in their constitution that said that did not allow any foreign investment or the extraction of profit. And what's going on here, both with this law that, you know, the Iraqi parliament took a month vacation or 6 week vacation, and they wanted to pass this law that would, sure, split up the revenues, but would also allow the penetration of Western oil companies.
Well, sure, and you know, there's an article in here where about that the Iraqis are supposed to. We've gone in there and completed all these projects valued at $5.8 billion. Well, and then they want the Iraqis to take them over, and then pay them for it. Now, that, you know, what an absurd concept. I mean, first of all, one in three Iraqis doesn't even have access to clean water, and they're in need of emergency aid. And here, what we're doing is we're crippling the reconstruction efforts because they don't their infrastructure is totally shot.
Yeah, and we're getting to the point now where the neocons are trying to con us again, saying victory is possible. And
yeah, the propaganda war is in full swing because they're really trying to repel the public dissent.
Yeah, I know.
Because they need to. It's a horrible tragedy for those people.
Well, I think that they've got two strategies. The first one is they really believe if they put enough pressure on the insurgents, if they kill enough people, if they destroy enough of Iraq, that the resistance, which doesn't have the long supply lines like we do, you'd think it would be the opposite. Short supply lines would take the day. But in this case, we can keep at least materially supplying these our troops there forever, although I don't know whether we're going to continue to have the manpower. But we can eventually wear them down, no matter. And if we're willing to sacrifice thousands of more Americans, tens of thousands of more Iraqis, that's a strategy that's pretty awful. Politically, they're hoping if it is a loser, they're going to dump it in the lap of President Clinton or President Obama
whoever
or President
President
Gore. And as I said last night, there's a long history of that. that's what Poppy Bush did in 1993 when he dropped Somalia in the lap of Bill Clinton.
Well, I would just wish people would the most important book, I think, was Seymour Hersh's Chain of Command.
Absolutely.
And if people read that and they understand that the Coalition Provisional Authority, run by whoever that guy was named with.
Yeah, well, listen, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I'll tell you. Well, let me just 1 second. Go see. It should be coming your way pretty soon. No End in Sight, and it talks all about that man. And as soon as I end the show, I'll remember his name. But he was the guy that was the head of the Provisional Authority in Iraq, essentially the czar. All right, thanks a lot, and thanks to all of you for being so hospitable. Let's all put out the good vibes for Mike Malloy and get him back here tomorrow where he belongs in this seat. Ian Hoffman, Phoenix, thank you, man. I couldn't have done this without you. And thanks for all of you. Thanks for listening and calling. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and see what I'm up to. And we'll talk further down the road.